Now, I want to move on to our main debate. And before we do, I'm going to just have a listen to this. This is a compilation that was put together for the This Week programme recently. They went to on campus in Limerick and to Kilkenny to gauge if young people were planning to vote and what might influence them if they did.
Yeah, I probably will, because we had like fair bad water problems in our area and our local TD sorted it out for us, so I probably will vote for him.
Housing crisis and the hospital situations currently at the minute?
Probably won't, to be honest. I don't really have much interest in it, but sure. Still only a young fella, so when I'm older I might have interest in it. I don't really watch news or any of that crack, like I just go with the flow.
A big one for me, I'd say, would be insurance costing, driving up and down to college daily.
Probably will, but I don't really know anything about it. Like, I literally haven't. There's no one coming around where I live. But we're from like rural, out the countryside, like, so there's nobody around.
I haven't really picked a party or anything to vote, but I think definitely with a homeless crisis and everything like that, I'll definitely be looking into it before I vote. Yeah.
Housing crisis, education, and healthcare. It sounds really bad, but the way I found out about the whole voting going on was through an Instagram like influencer.
And that last young person there, the contributor there, is saying that it sounds bad, very sheepishly admitting that she learned that there was an election on through Instagram. But that wouldn't be that unusual for somebody in that age group, Ellen, would it?
No, and like Joe.ie is covering a general election for the first time, and we'd get way more engagement and questions through people on Instagram than people on Twitter. I think Twitter is kind of where people who have political interests go. And we get a lot of questions sent into us as well that ranges from everything from how do the first preference systems vote? When is it on? To basically asking us if we can tell people who the best party to vote for on how issues like housing is. Obviously, we don't advise anyone on how to vote. But yeah, I think it is quite common. And I think that there is a huge amount of disengagement as well, maybe because Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael wouldn't be as popular as other parties for people who are aged between 18 and 34. And when they hear rhetoric on the news, which suggests that one of those parties is going to win, that it's going to be Micheál or Leo, that's the Taoiseach, that kind of takes the motivation out of young people when they feel like it's just going to be one of the same parties that it's been for 80 years.
Could this be working against you, Malcolm Byrne? This, you know, absolute refusal to contemplate even discussing a coalition arrangement with Sinn Féin.
Well, I think the first thing is there's probably a slight difference there when you say young people aren't interested in politics, because clearly, even by listening to the Vox Pop, young people are actually interested in politics. So whether it's climate change or the cost of car insurance or education, there is a real passion about those. And we've seen it in, you know, the marriage equality and abortion referenda, or even in campaigning on specific local issues, young people are involved. The difficulty has always been about, you know, political parties and the political system that we have responding to
that. But young people in particular, and actually if you look at the demographics that, of support in the most recent, say, Red Sea poll, they give a very good breakdown of figures there. You have the oldest voters. And you have the fewest young voters at Fianna Fáil. It's not that different to Fine Gael, but you're notably on the wrong end of that.
There has been, but I mean, there have been examples. And I would say that that's always something that's the case. But Fianna Fáil has always been a party that has encouraged younger candidates. So I know Tate here is the youngest candidate in the country. The second youngest candidate in the country is James O'Connor, who we're running in Cork East. John Cook was mentioning Cathal Crowe there.
Are you going to get all your candidates' names on?
But I'm making the point in terms of providing opportunities for young people. Like Cathal Crowe started off as a 23-year-old councillor, and a lot of us started. My replacement on Wexford County Council.
But quite a lot of councillors start off
generally, not always the case. It's about parties giving those opportunities. And I think the question is about do the political parties give enough opportunities for young people? Yes, I would love to see more young people involved in politics. I think you see young people involved in activism, but not necessarily getting involved
in party
politics, which is a challenge for all of us.
Owen O'Brien, speaking of that data, what that data, in particular the last Red Sea poll, showed very strongly in the analysis of Richard from the Red Sea,
Richard Cowell.
Saying that what that data is telling them is that young people, people from the AB1 demographic, are moving towards Sinn Féin. They're looking for something more radical in their politics. What are you doing what is it? I mean, obviously your policy, you're going to tell me you've got brilliant policies and that's why they're supporting you. But are you consciously packaging your message in a way that will appeal to younger voters?
Well, I think a couple of things are different about what's going on at the moment. So we've always done much better among the 18 to 35-year-olds in opinion polls than older age cohorts. What's happening this time, however, is not just that we're getting an even larger segment of that group of voters, but their likelihood to vote has increased dramatically. And if you read the Richard Cowell piece, what he's saying is it's not just that, I think it's somewhere 35% of 18 to 35-year-olds are indicating a support for Sinn Féin, but their likelihood to vote is way, way beyond what it would have been in the last general election. And that's something we're kind of seeing on the doors. And I mean, we need to be careful here because young people aren't a single homogenous group, right? And there are lots of young people
with lots of different opinions,
political campaigns and involved in political parties, particularly those that are more on the progressive end of the spectrum. I think what is happening, however, is a larger number of young people than normally would be engaging in a political and an electoral process are focusing on the issue of housing. And it does seem to be
because
the case
that... Because it impacts
that
so directly on them.
First of all, because it impacts on them so directly. So we saw really, really significant housing activism, for example, from students in Galway and Dublin only 2 years ago. That led to a really powerful campaign by the students in the USI that led to significant legislative change. And now students have greater protections from rent increases than they had before. And that originated from the students themselves getting organised, working with progressive parties like ourselves and others and forcing the government to act. But it's also, I think, a lesson because, you know, a lot of parties after marriage equality and after repeal, some parties were like, well, how can we capitalise on this without actually understanding that what the young people involved in politics there were focused on were issues. Housing is the issue. It's rent. It's the inability to access affordable homes.
But my question to you,
to answer the question,
how do you get that message across?
I think two things. First of all, it is about having the right policies. So, for example, we have consistently argued for measures to constrain rents when Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael voted them down from 2016 to the present.
We'll get into the actual nuts and bolts of the policy in a moment.
But the first
but
is
in terms
the
of
the policies are important.
The communication.
And then what you do is you engage with young people wherever they're at. Now, some of that is on the streets. Some of it is in their communities. Some of it is on Instagram and platforms like joe.ie.
But I was looking at the spends on Facebook for the first week of the campaign and I was surprised that Fine Gael, for instance, spent almost 11,500 on Facebook ads and promoting things. And Sinn Féin only spent just over €1,000.
But two things. First of all, the cohort of young people we're talking about aren't on Facebook generally. Right, the demographic of Facebook is in general over 30. So it is about Instagram and it is about other sites. But also, it's not just about the platform. If the proposals aren't right, if the policies aren't right, if you're not speaking to the lived experience and the difficulties, for example, that young renters have, you can spend all the money you want on Facebook ads and it's not going to convince anybody that you're offering anything because young people aren't stupid. If parties are voting against, for example, rent certainty, if parties are one day supporting a rent freeze and the next day opposing a rent freeze, young people see that for what it is. And those of us that are consistent on the issues and have campaigned on the issues, I think we'll get the support.
Okay, let's talk to some young people. Adrian.
Yeah.
What's your sense out there? Do you get a sense, do you get that feel that those opinion polls are picking up that young people are motivated and mobilised for this election?
Yeah, no, there definitely has been a shift. I've been in politics now about 5 years and, you know, it kind of used to just be me sort of ranting in the back of the room, but now everyone is engaging, not just on the doors, but, I mean, when you go down for a pint, people are talking to a lot more about politics, which is always a healthy thing, I think, you know. And I just think it's very interesting you brought up the social media there. In terms of Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil have spent, I suppose, about 25,000. I mean, a young person wouldn't earn that in a year. And yet people for profit were able to get Vote PPP trending after the leaders' debate. So it's
But that
not
is
always,
the trick, isn't it?
It's the free thing if you manage to get something to go viral. Yeah, exactly. And I think it's just when you speak to them, like, and it's young people are not stupid. We can really see it even today in the Carlow Council. I had a motion on car insurance calling for a public car insurance company because it's the private companies are running a cartel here. And interestingly enough, it was a Fianna Fáil
I'm sure they would deny they're running a cartel.
I'm sure they would.
Just put that in there.
But it was a Fianna Fáil councillor who wanted to vote against that. So these are the different things that were coming up. And I think young people are seeing through that as well. Even my own campaign team, I really actually feel like we have it won just in terms of we have a creative, young, dynamic force, a really tech savvy. We have a young fella, Daniel is his name. He's 19 years of age and we were out canvassing and he was running ahead to try and get the next door because he was just so enthusiastic. I mean, we've young
female
activists.
We'll knock that out of him in a few years.
I said that to him. But you've young repeal activists who are coming on the ground and leading canvases and really taking charge, I suppose, of their community and fighting for that political spirit that I'm really starting to see. So I think we're at a shifting point in Irish society. And somebody actually said to me today, it was a Fine Gael councillor, said, oh, look, you're mainstream now, you know, people are... I said, no, I said, actually, people have just come to the left. This is, we've got the platform to have progressive common sense politics, and people are seeing...
Okay, yeah. I want to get Tate in on this now. You were nodding there. You do think that the young vote has moved to a more radical place?
Yeah, I definitely do. I think, as Owen said, actually... It's,
are you actually the youngest candidate in the whole country?
I am. I think, as Owen said, I think it's kind of speaking to a lived experience that's important. I think housing, as was mentioned, is a huge lived experience of many young people at the minute that they've struggled with. So it's the first time where they've actually maybe seen that, okay, something can be done directly in politics to change this. Whereas before that, perhaps they hadn't just connected with the fact that a political activism or a change in their vote could actually change the way they're living their life. I think climate's obviously another big one where young people need to see a party or to see politicians that are willing to plan for the future. Young people don't want to turn on a political debate and hear someone say, my grandfather did this in the Civil War. They want to see someone who's going to plan for the future. They want to see someone who's going to look at the issues that are affecting their life and their future, because they don't care what's happened 10 years ago, 20 years ago. It's about looking at their issues, which are things like mental health, things like climate, things like housing, things like the fact that one in every 20 euro tax we pay is going to pay a national debt we're not responsible for, and it's about giving us a better deal for our future.
Okay, in relation to that, and I do want to get into housing, just into the detail, a little bit of detail on that, and those other climate and those other things. But when you look at this campaign so far, and the issue that took off and kind of took, I think, a lot of the parties by surprise in the first and second week was the issue of pensions. Now, I just wonder, how is that playing with people like yourself who will actually... seeing, first of all, the power of that grey vote and how that has shifted policies, like, you know, on a hairpin, but also thinking, well, hang on a minute, we're going to be the ones paying for this in 50 years' time. So,
I think. For me, it's actually shown, as you said, that the power of the grey vote, and that we actually need to kind of show that young people have power in their vote, that we need to make sure the political parties prioritise the young vote.
But I mean, they haven't been voting.
Exactly, and that's where I'm trying to get the message across, that I think this time we are voting much more. I think young people are going to engage, in my own constituency, I really hope they engage. But no, I think it's about actually mobilising young people and showing them that their vote does count. And it's a perfect example of that, showing that the grey vote, continuous high turnout has shown that politicians all of a sudden respond to that. I think it's about getting that message across to young people that if we all unite like that, then our vote can really make a huge difference.
Although it's not the grey vote that's mobilised by the pensions, because they've already retired. In fact, the really interesting thing about the pensions debate is that people in their 30s, in their 40s, people in their 30s, 40s and 50s who aren't graying are actually very, very...
I don't know if that many people in their 30s think about their pensions.
Come and spend a few hours on the canvas with me or any candidate, and you will see a whole range of people, because you have people in their 30s who are either concerned about them or their own parents, who might be 5 or 10 years out from pension age, and they're thinking, hang on a second, so TDs get to retire on a full pension at 55, yet my parents or grandparents have been asked to extend that pension age to 66, 67, 68. So actually, the difficulty with the pensions issue, particularly for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, is the breadth of the age group. But also, it's not a young versus old. I mean, I have to say, the idea that you have the right to retire at 65, when, for example, the average across Europe is actually lower than that. And in France today, young people and middle-aged people are protesting in their tens of thousands against an attempt to raise it from 62, shows that actually lots and lots of people care about pensions, not just those who are a couple of years out from 66.
You know, quite a few people worry we're going to deal with that.
Absolutely. And what you have to do is set out how you're going to pay for it. But what you don't do is support parties that bankrupted the country when they were last in government, because somehow people think they're more fiscally responsible when they're not.
Tate made a very valid point, because I think what we actually need to start to look at is looking toward the future. And I mean, Tate's point about, you know, what motivated me to get involved in politics. I mean, my teenage years were spent seeing, you know, the Berlin Wall falling down, Nelson Mandela being set free, the peace process. So that kind of shaped my political thinking. And similarly, for
you
those
were a big picture
were,
kind of politician, well, obviously. Yeah,
but why did you join Fianna Fáil?
There are a lot of reasons, and I don't want to go into this, because I think, one, your political background kind of shapes that. I think Tate's point is very valid, because if you look at those who are voting for the first time, you know, they will have been born you know, the Good Friday Agreement happened before, you know, they were born. 9/11 happened before they were born. So those kind of experiences have not, you know, they didn't live through those experiences.
Do you think if you, because I'm just going to ask you directly about this now, because as you say, this vote, and there's no doubting it from that data, unless that was some blip in the, the you know, political landscape, that a lot of those voters who could have been Fianna Fáil voters or Fine Gael voters are moving towards Sinn Féin in that age group. Are you saying it because they weren't around for the Troubles?
I think that that's certainly a factor. And I certainly think, and I've said this, I think that the, you know, the further that Sinn Féin moves away from that history, and there are a lot of individuals who are involved in Sinn Féin who would have had no link with that past, that kind of changes the nature of a political party, as it does with any political party. I want to just Tate's point about the challenges, because the challenges that are going to be faced over the next decade, and particularly those who are voting for the first time, either coming out of school or coming out of college or an apprenticeship, they're going to face the challenge of climate change. They're going to face huge technological changes over the next decade with automation and AI and blockchain technology. But equally, and this is where the pensions issue is crucial, we're all living longer. Somebody who is a teenager today has a 1 in 5 chance of living to the age of 100. A baby born this year has 1 in 3 chance. So that does have long-term implications for pensions and health policy. Now, our problem is we're not thinking far enough ahead. This is one of the challenges around
climate change. Surely your problem is that you thought far enough ahead, however long, was it 10, 15 years ago?
Yeah.
But when the actual day arrived, you thought, oh no, we'll just kick that can further down the road.
Yeah, and that's going to be a political challenge.
This is part of the Fianna Fáil manifesto.
The Fianna Fáil approach is always that you should have a situation whereby you have a transitionary pension. You shouldn't be, first of all, you shouldn't be forcing anybody to retire at 65 because some people want to continue working. Mm-hmm. But the idea that somebody, after giving a lifetime of work, has to sign on, to me, is morally wrong. That should never happen. We're not going to allow that to happen in government.
Okay, I'm just getting a text in here. Interesting hearing the views of young people who don't pay tax, etc. Why get their views? Senior citizens like myself, who have paid everything all our lives and still do, seem to be irrelevant, says Ina. And the grey vote has kept TDs paid. How rude you all are, says Phil. The Saturday vote, the move to vote on a Saturday, which it's not, once it was kind of announced, it's kind of, why haven't we been doing this for decades? Is it going to make a difference, Adrian, do you think?
I think, to be honest with you, I actually originally thought it was a bit of a quick move from Fine Gael to try and kind of get that low vote turnout, because I know an awful lot of people actually, and you see it peaks going to work or coming back from work is when people are voting. On a Saturday, you can be a bit more relaxed, you could be out with the kids, it's not going to be high up on your agenda, is my concern. But to be honest with you, I think Fine Gael have just pissed too many people off. I think they're going to be coming out and voting on Saturday regardless. And just in Carlow, it is a college town, so I know an awful lot of people, a lot of students had actually voted to register in Carlow to vote against or to repeal the 8 and stuff like that, so they'll be going home then, do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's a bit of a funny one really, but I think it has kind of backfired on Fine Gael.
Tate?
I think it was also another reason it was a quick move was because, of course, people who've registered to vote in the past year weren't actually on the register and they thought they were, so every 18 year old who had registered in the past year, of course, wasn't actually able to vote. I went in and spoke to my school principal about this, my former school principal, and he said, no, you know, everyone's registered to vote, all 18-year-olds, and of course none of them actually are on the register. So I think it's another quick move, considering that he actually went on the radio and said, oh, you know, there's absolutely no reason why students can't vote in this one. And I think that was a very smart move, because he's going to stick to that line, even though there is a very, very valid reason, and it's actually up to his own.
Do you think that's actually cynical on his part?
I mean, I think it is. I think it was done on purpose. I think he sees his low vote from people of my age group, and he's chosen to do that on purpose.
Okay, well, of course, we don't have a Fine Gael representative in the studio tonight, but we will be putting that to them before the election is out. Ellen, one of the things that's striking about this campaign that is surprising is how the green issues and biodiversity and all of those concerns, climate anxiety, they haven't featured as strongly as might have been anticipated. Certainly not as strongly as they featured in the European and local election campaigns.
Yeah, maybe not at the top. I think it'll be interesting to see if that green wave that happened in the locals is replicated in the general election, where the perceived wisdom is that people vote a little bit more selfishly than thinking about the cost of their own rent and that sort of stuff. But I think that, you know, talking to younger people, young people feel the way about climate change that Fine Gael wishes everyone felt about Brexit. They see it as like this massive issue.
Look at me, the way you look at Brexit.
Like this massive issue, which if it isn't handled correctly, will destroy everything else, health, housing, all the other things that go to the top of the agenda. But I think one of the issues, and I think Tate touched on it when we were talking about like movements that have brought young people in, like repeal and marriage equality. One of the problems is when an issue like climate gets to the top of the political agenda, political parties either realise that it's an important thing or realise that there's a lot of political capital in it. So I think that this time, for the first time, there's huge swathes of manifestos which claim to be the best one on climate. And it actually gets very confusing for young people who have to spend a lot of time trying to discern, for example, what is the correct position on a carbon tax? Because you have parties taking different positions. You have people within the same parties taking different positions,
Tate.
I think that it's been, I've seen quite a lot of activism where people have actually tried to go back and look at the voting records of main parties to figure out if they actually mean what they say on climate. And one of the other things is we had a lot of movements over the last year, whether it was Extinction Rebellion or the school strikes. One of the key things of those movements is that they remain apolitical. The idea being that climate change, the threat is so existential that you immediately compromise when you work within a political system. But you'd have people like Saoirse McHugh who would argue that it's much too late. And while she wants to dismantle the state and bring in a guillotine, she thinks that you have to work within the system that exists at the moment. So I think there's a little bit of anxiety among those climate movements about whether or not it's right to engage in politics.
Tate, what's your sense out there? I mean, you're in a rural constituency or you're largely rural constituency. That must be trickier, is it, if you're going into the yards of farmers and trying to tell them why you should be voting green?
I think you need to identify the difference between why you should be voting green and why you should be worried about the climate, first of all. And I think it's rural people care as much about the climate as urban people. And that's a message we have to make sure is clear. And we have to stop this idea that they don't. However, rural people do not want to be targeted by the climate movement. Farmers feel slightly vulnerable by the climate movement and they feel as though they could be, you know, targeted, as do other rural people who just drive to work and drive to whatever. And I think the main message that we have to get across, that I'm trying to get across, is that they aren't to blame, that they're actually the custodians. They're the people we need to bring with us. And if we are to be successful in stopping climate change, then we have to bring absolutely everybody on board, and it can't target anyone. So I think,
what kind of a reception are you getting? Like, is it as big an issue as you had anticipated?
It's a big issue, but it comes with the anxiety, first of all, of what climate change brings, but it also comes with the anxiety of, oh no, what will you do to me, kind of thing. And it's about just getting the message across that it's only a positive thing if we take fair climate action seriously, that it can only be a positive thing for all of us.
But it will inevitably involve, Adrian, put this to you, it will inevitably involve challenges to people. People will have to change many ways, things that they've taken for granted, or we've all taken for granted for a long time. So, I mean, is that one of the issues that you don't really want to be talking about, hard, difficult choices that people have to make in the middle of an election campaign?
I think it's important that we need a system change, right? And alongside that, then you're going to have a cultural knock-on effect of, I imagine they won't be producing single-use plastic, but they're not going to. Coca-Cola, for example, is the biggest producer of single-use plastic. We know it's destroying the planet. They keep doing it. Why? Because they're allowed to do it by the government. So people for profit are looking for that system change where you actually start penalising those who are accountable. So we're the only party that's taken on the fossil fuel industry and saying they're the ones who've known about this for 20 years, hid the evidence. It's very dangerous what they've done.
This is the keep it in the ground campaign.
Absolutely, yeah. And we have a bill to keep all the fossil fuels in the ground and stop the exploration of oil and gas. And we want them to pay a carbon tax. And then that's a lot of money that you can actually then start to fund the mass scale shift to renewable energy. So we need a system change. We can't be penalising people. And I think particularly with small and medium farmers, that they need to be paid and not punished when it comes to fighting climate change. And they are a part of the solution. People for profit, for example, we want to give each farmer €3,000 per hectare of land that they can use for, if it's trees or some sort of something that can take carbon out of the environment. And I was actually curious myself why there wasn't as much climate anxiety or green issues on the door. But I think that's because the energy around climate change has actually come into activism, and it's not like they're just relying on every politician. They're actually going, I know myself, there's a different events planned in Carlow this week with Extinction Rebellion, that there's that energy there, that they've kind of not just relying on putting pressure on the political systems, they themselves are taking charge of the situation. Because, look, the establishment have failed my generation when it comes to it.
Malcolm, you failed that generation.
Well, I mean, I just want to touch on, I mean, the point you made, Katie, about difficult decisions being made, and I'd agree with Tate's points, but if you listen to the Vox Pop there, and among the two issues that come up among young people are climate change on the one hand, but the other is the cost of car insurance. And so there is still, and even though climate change might be raised, a lot of young people still want, and particularly in rural areas where, you know, there isn't a public transport option.
They need a car.
You need the car. And I mean, there's all been all sorts of issues around learner drivers and so on as well.
But isn't that tied into the housing thing? Because people are now driving to college rather than actually being able to stay near there.
So we do need to look at, you know, how we do that. But it's Tate's point is valid about you cannot, you know, continually climate shame farmers.
But isn't it a bit tough to sit around now as a party like Fianna Fáil and persuade people that you are going to turn yourselves into climate warriors?
But I think if you look at the party's policy in terms of what we've been doing, we have been consistent in terms of on the agreement with regard to a carbon tax, but it has to be fair and have regards to fuel poverty. We have been very strong on the whole question of a Clean Air Act and addressing the burning of smoky fuels, particularly from an environmental point of view, but also from a health point of view. And it's one of the first pieces of legislation that we want to introduce.
Ellen, do young people that are in touch with Joe.ie think Fianna Fáil are a green, clean party?
No, they don't. I'm sorry. I mean, I think you can kind of see this existential problem of climate change being framed as, you know, environmentalists versus farmers from the way, first of all, the rate at which Leo Varadkar is going around buying sausages for fear that anyone thinks he's vegan. And I did an interview with Micheál Martin last week where he said that he was, you know, a lot of his diet was plant-based. And I asked him if he was vegan. And it was as though I was suggesting he was strangling Labradors on the campaign trail. So I feel like there is that kind of threat of Micheál was talking to the IFA, they're very nervous around anything that suggests, you know, we need to reduce our red meat consumption, anything that can be seen as a threat to farmers. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael don't seem willing to.
That's not the case, because what we've argued about is it's all about a just transition, because there is a political danger in doing this, which we saw with Brexit and with Trump's election, that if you marginalise a group in society and if you don't bring them with them, you'll see rebellion and reaction. The Australian federal election was the classic example of this, where there was a green wave in urban areas, but in a lot of rural areas where they were felt that they were being blamed for the problems, the Liberal National Coalition came into power.
Because I need to take a break.
We have to stop framing the climate change debate as something that's going to cost everybody. First of all, because not acting and not tackling is going to cost us much more, but also it creates enormous opportunities. And for example, there are lots and lots of really interesting debates around changes to agricultural practice that can be done in cooperation with farmers in terms of less intensive beef farming that gives higher quality grade beef, which actually provides farmers with greater levels of income while at the same time supporting biodiversity and better use of land. So rather than, you know, unlike the one of the media debates recently that almost said, well, if you tackle climate change, it's going to hurt everybody, we have to shift in the other direction.
Just transition.
What I will also say is this, is that it isn't a surprise that climate change isn't a big part of this debate, but maybe we'll come back to that after
your break. Literally, we'll just go for this break and we'll hold that thought.
Email latedebate@rte.ie. The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And you're welcome back. I stopped you mid-sentence there, Owen O'Brien. Why are you not surprised that
two reasons.
Climate change isn't coming up?
For example, if you look at the local and European elections, well, the Green Party did exceptionally well in the European elections. In fact, their local election vote was about half of that. And there was some really interesting focus group research that was done by one of the large polling companies after the election with what they call switch voters, looking at people who might have traditionally voted Sinn Féin or people for profit who went to Greens, mm-hmm. particularly in South County Dublin. And they understood very clearly that for them, the European election gave them an opportunity to raise that bigger issue of climate. But when they were asked what was going to be their big issues in the general election, they were all saying housing. Housing was going to be the key issue. And again, if you listen to your Vox Pop, the two issues that were actually Absolutely. Mentioned the most were housing and health and all the opinion polls. So I'm surprised that it hasn't come up more in the doors, because ultimately it is an issue for domestic government. But I'm not surprised that housing has come to dominate, because it is the most immediate pressing issue for that generation.
Just got a text here. People under 40 register to vote on the abortion and marriage equality referendums. There are 1 million renting. Who will vote on housing? A sea change is coming. Just very quickly on that housing issue. Is it the rent issue that your age group is more concerned about, or is it the homelessness issue, or is it the fact that your hopes of buying a house and getting on the housing ladder?
Honestly, it's all three. If I'm honest, even in Carlow now, which is a small town, you know, it has an unprecedented number of homeless every month. There's about 30 in emergency accommodation, and I get a lot more calls about hidden homelessness. On top of that, then it's the rents. The rents are incredibly high. the HAPS isn't fit for purpose because you have to top up your landlord. So that it's very difficult to survive and try and save for a house because the banks aren't lending. Like, so people for profit, and we absolutely want to cut the rent, and you can do that by linking it to Consumer Price Index. But on top of that, have a rental tenant board that actually has teeth and is able to kind of tackle that power that landlords do have, economic and political. And you know, one third of all Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil TDs are landlords, so it is very important that we have that equality. But People for Profit, look, we had a bill to have a right to housing in the constitution. It was voted against. We had a bill to stop evictions where there was genuine economic distress, and that was voted against. So the solutions are there, but the establishment parties aren't voting for us.
Yeah, Malcolm Burr, just in relation to that, the rent freeze. You along with Fine Gael were the only parties who were against it up until last November, when you were about to hit the doors to campaign in the by-election. Micheál Martin said then, the time has come. We've had whatever many successive rental increases. We had 14, I think, successive quarterly increases in rent. I said, yeah, this has to be done. Rents have to be frozen. And he's completely rolled back on that now.
Yeah, well, there is a constitution issue, and I think one of the
don't we all know you can cite a constitutional issue for pretty much anything
to
do.
Let's look at this because I mean,
did he not notice there was a constitutional issue last November?
Yeah, but Adrian has sort of launched into an attack again on landlords, and we've got to remember that there are a couple of things here. One, in order to have a rental market,
could you maybe answer my question first and then your speech?
There was a reluctance within the Fianna Fáil parliamentary party to support the idea of a rent freeze, partially because we didn't think that in the long run it would provide a solution. What we agreed to do was we would support the Sinn Féin bill to allow it to go on to committee stage for a discussion.
Micheál Martin said, I don't have the quote in front of me, but I've read it in the studio before,
but
he said this has to happen. The government should now move to freeze rents.
Because what was happening was...
So that's not calling for a review. That's saying you are now fully behind a rent freeze.
Yeah, and it was the case of that we don't believe that rent should continue to increase. But if you introduce a rent freeze at the moment, right, what will happen is, and look,
what I'm trying to figure out is why you were so gung-ho about this in November and found a constitutional issue with it.
Because a rent freeze will not provide any additional homes.
Did you not know this in November?
For people.
Nobody claims it does.
What we said was we would facilitate, because Sinn Féin asked, would we facilitate the
Malcolm,
bill?
I've said this, said, so, no, how many times I've said this. That is not what was said. That was not what was said
at
that time.
Well, this was our position, which was very clear at the time, which was we would facilitate the Sinn Féin bill. Our business and what we want to achieve is first of all, more homes being built, and more homes being available for rent. And unfortunately, Adrian is sort of labelling all landlords as being bad. That's not the case. In fact, the majority of landlords...
the political establishment that are promoting landlords. That's the problem.
I think it's very brave
man and defend landlords.
I have no problem defending landlords because
Vulture funds, I suppose. You're not too far away from them either.
That's
exactly what has wrecked this country, Malcolm.
Adrian, listen.
But Katie, let's...
There is nothing wrong with... No, I do want to address this point because here's where we're talking about young people and what are they concerned about? One, yes, they want to see the scandal of homelessness addressed. Two, they want to ensure that they have somewhere to rent, and that requires a proper rental market, and we can have a big debate about that. But thirdly, young people and others need to aspire to be able to own their own home. And the difference between Fianna Fáil as a centrist party and those on the left is that we support the aspirations of people to own their own home.
Very quickly, because I'm just watching the clock here.
But two things. First of all, home ownership declined dramatically under the last Fianna Fáil government. Let's deal with the facts and go to the CSO's figures and you'll see them. The most dramatic drop in private home ownership was under Fianna Fáil because house prices inflated so far out of control that people couldn't buy them. But let's look at Fianna Fáil's record on renters. Six times in the course of this Dáil, there have been measures proposed by Sinn Féin, the Social Democrats, People for Profit, in various ways to constrain rents. And every single time since the end of 2016, Fianna Fáil has voted them down.
I know you're dying to say it, is that you have to be very careful intervene in this market because what we absolutely need is for landlords to stay in the market and to invest in
two things. right? And you see, this is the problem when we talk about the rent freeze, because people keep saying, okay, oh, it doesn't work on its own. Of course it doesn't work on its own. You have to have large-scale public investment in affordable cost rental accommodation, something that Fianna Fáil has actually blocked and argued against for several years. But you also have to stop rents rising, and you have to put money back in renters' pockets. We offered a package of all three measures. Okay. For 4 years,
okay, I want Malcolm, I want a tax on second properties.
While
abolishing the property tax, absolutely, and happy to do it.
In the young people you're talking to, you're like at the very youngest edge of this. What are they looking for? What are they hope? Like, what is would make them vote for a party in terms of their housing, rental, homelessness situation?
Well, young people face a couple of problems in housing at the minute. One is, you know, can we afford, say, to rent if we want to go to college, if we want to work somewhere that's not where we grew up? And the second is, can we ever afford to own a home? So they're the two main issues. And they're both key concerns. We have more people than ever commuting ridiculous distances for college, for work, and young people. And that's where the issue, as you said, of car insurance comes from and things like that. And they do want to see a party that actually just, they do want to see, you know, a politician that wants to provide those two things for them. So they want to see the rental crisis tackled head on. Things like cost rental, things like derelict and vacant sites bill, to get derelict and vacant sites back into action. There's 183,000 vacant housing units in the country, and that needs to be tackled as well.
Okay, I'm sorry to cut across, but I'm told again I have to take my last break, so we'll take that now.
Email latedebate@rte.ie.